Colin Ireland was a pretty unremarkable guy. Often a victim of bullying as a child, Colin turned to petty theft, burglary, and blackmail. After a stint in juvenile detention, he became obsessed with survivalism, often wearing military gear and camping out in the woods. After getting divorced twice and losing his job at a homeless shelter due to his explosive temper, Colin was at a crossroads in his life. That is until 1993, where he made a very strange New Year's resolution. Welcome to History's Biggest Villains. Colin Ireland was born on March 16, 1954 in Dartford, Kent. His father left shortly after his birth, leaving his 17-year-old mother to fend for herself. Colin's mother moved around to 9 different homes in 6 years. His mother married an electrician in 1961, but since his work was irregular, the family was financially unstable. Colin attended 6 schools between the ages of 5 and 10. He was always the new boy, and his thin, lanky frame and bow-legged stance made him an obvious target for bullies. In 1964, Colin, age 10, along with his mother and stepfather, were evicted. But Colin was an expense that she couldn't afford, so she placed him into foster care. When she and his stepfather found a new home, they invited Colin back. Soon after, his stepfather walked out on them. 2 years later, Colin's mother had gotten married again. In Sheerness, Kent, Colin was approached on 4 occasions by older men wanting to have sex with him. The first of these encounters was when he was working at a fairground as a summer holiday job. He was offered a necklace for his mother in exchange for a sexual act. Then, when he was 12, in a public toilet, a man peered over the top of the cubicle wall and watched him. His third encounter was at a cinema. His optician saw him and asked for sexual favors. The fourth was with a man working in a secondhand shop. Colin resisted all their advances each time. There was never any physical abuse or sexual contact, but each time an older man offered money or a reward in exchange for sex. By the time he was 15, he had resorted to petty crime, being sent to Borstal for theft. While he was there, he set fire to someone else's belongings. 2 years later, he was convicted of robbery. Colin tried to make ends meet, so he had a series of manual jobs. Then, in December 1975, he was convicted of car theft, criminal damage, and 2 burglaries, for which he was sentenced to 18 months in prison. He was released in November 1976 and moved to Swindon, Wiltshire, where he lived with a woman and her children for a few months. In 1977, he was convicted of extortion, for which he again was sentenced to 18 months in prison. In 1980, he was convicted of robbery, so then he was sentenced to 2 years in prison. In 1982, Colin married Virginia Zammit, who was wheelchair-bound. The couple and their daughter lived in the Holloway area of London. In 1985, he was convicted and sentenced to 6 months for having burglary tools on him. He divorced in 1987 after his wife discovered that he had cheated. In 1989, he married Janet Young. He was abusive to her and stole £10,000 from her. Then he dropped Janet and her kids off to her mother's house, where he abandoned them. He then moved to Southend-on-Sea, where he became homeless and lived in a hostel. It was around this time where he became obsessed with survivalism, often dressing up in military gear and camping out in the woods in Essex. He also volunteered at a homeless shelter in London, but he lost his job in December 1992 after an explosive outburst. A colleague at the shelter recalled that Colin was troubled, frustrated, and didn't know what to do with his life. As 1993 was on the horizon, Colin made a startling New Year's resolution. He wanted to become a serial killer. He frequently traveled to the Colhern Arms, a gay pub in Earl's Court, London, where he decided on his targets. He had previously worked as a bouncer in a gay nightclub, so he was already acclimated to this environment. After filling a backpack with a rope, gloves, a knife, and a change of clothing, Colin found his first victim, 45-year-old theater director Peter Walker, at the Colhern. Peter invited Colin back to his apartment, where Colin tied Walker to his bed, beat and whipped him, burned his penis with a lighter while demanding his bank details, then suffocated him with a plastic bag. Colin stayed in the apartment to watch TV and tidy up the crime scene. He left Peter's body with knotted condoms jammed in his mouth and nostrils and 2 teddy bears arranged on the bed in the 69 position. Walker's body was still undiscovered 2 days later, on March 5, 1993, when Colin called a London newspaper, The Sun, to say that he was concerned about the dead man's dogs, whom he had left locked in another room. He also said, "It was my New Year's resolution to murder a human being." Police had no evidence of any substance, and their manhunt was hampered by a March 6 judicial ruling that acts of sadomasochistic sex were illegal for consenting British adults. Potential victims were now extremely reluctant to cooperate with authorities, and autopsy results were inconclusive as to whether Walker's death had been deliberate or accidental. The police knew little more than the fact that the dead man was HIV positive. In late May, Collin returned to the Coalhorn and picked up 37-year-old librarian Christopher Dunn. Dunn's body was found at his northeast London home on May 30th, bound by a leather harness, gagged, and nude. Police initially recorded his death as a probable accident during a sex game. No link was made to Walker's death as it was in a different location. The accident theory was ruled out when cash was removed from his bank account, with the thief using Dunn's ATM card. A few days later, police received an anonymous call from Dunn's killer, taunting them for their failure to link the two crimes. In June, Collin met 35-year-old American businessman Perry Bradley III at the Coalhorn pub. The two men returned to Bradley's apartment, where Collin suggested that he tie Bradley up. But he really wasn't on board with the idea. In order to get Bradley to comply, Collin told him that he couldn't perform sexually without elements of bondage. Bradley hesitantly cooperated and was soon tied up on his own bed, face down, with a noose around his neck. After Collin had secured Bradley, he demanded money and his PIN number under the threat of torture. Collin told Bradley that he was merely a thief and would leave after stealing Bradley's money. Bradley gave Ireland his PIN, which Ireland later used to steal £200, along with £100 in cash stolen from Bradley's flat. Collin told him that he should go to sleep, as he wouldn't be leaving his apartment for several hours. Bradley eventually did fall asleep, and Collin momentarily thought of leaving Bradley unharmed. But then he realized that Bradley could identify him. Collin used the noose around Bradley's neck to strangle him. Before leaving Bradley's flat, he placed a doll on top of the dead man's body. Collin called the police afterwards, telling them, "I did the American. You've got some good leads on my identity from clues at the scene." Collin had studied the FBI manual for details of technique and the minimum required body count. "I've got the book," he said. "I know how many you have to do." He called the police again, saying, "Are you still interested in the death of Peter Walker? Why have you stopped the investigation? Doesn't the death of a homosexual man mean anything? I will do another. I've always dreamed of doing the perfect murder." On the same day that Bradley's body was found, Collin returned to the Coalhorn again, picking up 33-year-old Andrew Collier. They returned back to Andrew's flat, where he handcuffed Andrew to the bed and demanded his bank details. After he refused to comply, Collin strangled him with a noose, also strangling his cat as well. Collin then put a condom on Andrew's penis, placing the dead cat's mouth over it, also placing the tail in Andrew's mouth. He rummaged through his belongings, leaving with 70 pounds, and also finding out that he was HIV positive. This time, while he was cleaning up the crime scene, Ireland missed one fingerprint found by police on a window frame. On June 15th, Ireland met Emmanuel Spiteri, a 41-year-old Maltese chef, and went back to his Southeast London flat for sex. Once there, he tied him up and asked for his PIN number, but he didn't get it. Collin strangled him, then spent the rest of the night watching television, eating his food. Ireland then tried to set his apartment on fire before he left, but the flames went out before causing any major damage. Police were unaware of the crime when he called them the next day asking, "Have you found the body in Southeast London yet? And the fire?" I can't understand how you see the same man walk into the same bar, walk out with five different men, and he comes back to the bar, and these five men are no longer with him. I don't know how you're not putting the pieces together. That really just disturbs me, but anyway, I digress. There were suggestions that homophobia on the part of the police delayed the linking of all the murders, but police eventually connected all five killings. The crimes were published by the mass media, and it quickly became known in the gay community that a serial killer was specifically targeting gay men. Spiteri's killing prompted Scotland Yard to launch a mass publicity campaign, including televised pleas for the killer to give himself up. Detectives learned that Spiteri had traveled by train with another man to Catford on the night he was killed, and a British rail security camera yielded blurry photos of the victim with an unidentified heavyset man. The photos were published, and several gay men in London reported meetings with a man matching the suspect's description. On July 19, 1993, Ireland approached his lawyer, admitting that he was the man in the photo, claiming that Spiteri was alive at his home with another identified man when they went their separate ways. However, police soon matched his fingerprint to the Collier crime scene, but Ireland was silent until August 19th when he finally confessed to all five homicides. On December 20th, after pleading guilty on all counts, he was sentenced to five terms of life imprisonment. The judge who sentenced him declared, "To take one human life is an outrage. To take five is carnage. In my view, it is absolutely clear that you should never be released." He later told police that he was indeed heterosexual, but he pretended to be gay to lure his victims. He told police that he had no vendetta against gay men, but picked on them because they were the easiest targets. He had robbed those he killed because he was unemployed at the time, and he needed funds to travel to and from London when hunting for victims. During his incarceration, there were rumors emanating from Wakefield Prison in Yorkshire that he killed again. The stories claimed that Collins strangled his cellmate, a convicted child killer, but no charges were filed against him since he was already serving life without parole and no harsher penalty was available under British law. 2 weeks after the reported killing, Ireland was transferred to a maximum security cell at Whitemore Prison in Cambridgeshire. Collins died on February 21, 2012 at Wakefield Prison. Later, his death was determined to be from pulmonary fibrosis and a fractured hip he had suffered earlier in the month. He was 57 years old. To be honest, this really doesn't even matter in the grand scheme of things, but I really feel like he was either a closeted homosexual or he harbored some hate against gay people from the incidents when he was young when the men were trying to abuse him. I just feel like he wanted attention. Maybe he felt kind of embarrassed that he might have been actually gay. You know what I mean? He might have been embarrassed by that. He wanted attention so bad. Like he's fiending for attention. Like he's killing guys and then calling the police like, "What? What? You telling me you haven't found this guy? What? I just killed him. Where are you at? How have you not found this guy? I just killed this guy. I just killed this guy on this road at this address. I just killed him." Like, he's fiending for attention. Like I said earlier, how do you see the same guy walk in the same pub, leave with five different men, and he comes back, and these men are nowhere to be seen, and you don't question anything? I would have said, "Hey, didn't you just walk out with a guy like 2 weeks ago? What happened to him? Wait, this is the third or fourth guy he's walked out with, and they haven't come back. There's something wrong with that." Like, he keeps leaving with these men, but these men are nowhere to be found. He just wanted attention. That's why he made the resolution, because he wanted attention. You see, that's why he did all these crazy things. Like, he's putting the teddy bears in the positions, and he's doing things with the cat, and he just wants attention. He just wanted it to be like a spectacle. "Oh, look what I did. Look how I killed these guys." You know, it's crazy, man. But anyway, thank you again for all the support. We just hit 500 subscribers. I appreciate all you guys for the support on this channel. Like, I really do. Leave a like. If you enjoy, hit that subscribe button if you're new to my channel. I'm out. Be safe. Stay on the grind. Peace.